Capitals, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It's great to be back in the U.S.
It is good to have you here.
I've been in Thailand for about 10 days. Hiking in the northern part of Thailand.
You were in Thailand to Taiwan-on.
I was in Thailand for a wedding, and then we went up to northern Thailand to sort of hike around the hill country.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered in the hill country is where they used to grow poppies, the hill tribes.
Okay.
And this was a major source of opium before it was outlawed. It was outlawed in the 40s.
Right.
And this area up there is what they called the Golden Triangle. It's where... It is where Thailand and Laos and Myanmar meet. And those three countries meet, and it's right there. The Mekong River runs through there. And there was an island out in the middle of where the three meet. And that's where the drug dealers were. And the Hill Tribe Indians would go to that island and trade in their opium. And they'd be paid in gold because nobody would trust the currency of any particular country. So that's why it was called the Golden Triangle.
Myanmar, now either currently or formerly known as Burma, right?
Burma.
It is now Myanmar.
Myanmar. It is. And so because the locals there didn't really like the name that the Brits gave it. So they went back.
They went
back to a more traditional name, mm-hmm, that they're happier with. And so it was quite an interesting trip, but it did show me as I walked through the hills trekking through the hills, that education makes a huge difference, because when they started turning the economy and showing the hill tribe folks that they could make more money growing vegetables and fruit, they actually started also educating the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so education was really sort of the crux of this. And now they're making more money on vegetables and fruit. And the nice thing is they basically get a crop around every 45 days instead of having an annual crop. So it actually was quite an education for me. I didn't know much about all of that stuff.
Aren't poppy seeds used in the making of other hallucinogens besides opium, or is it just opium?
Well, you refine opium, you get heroin.
That's it. Okay.
You get heroin, yes, okay. and then you get meth. There are various stages as you refine it, and the highest level of refinement is heroin.
Is heroin.
And the hill tribes, they would have these opium dens. They would just smoke it. They'd just go out, and you break open the pod, and the powder inside of it is the opium. And so they would just go out and break open the pod. And actually, the opium, they started growing it in China. And then the hill tribes were in China and Mongolia, and they were sort of driven out of China and Mongolia. Then they went to Laos and Cambodia and ultimately came to Thailand, and they brought the opium growing strategy with them.
Isn't there some old wives' tale about if you eat a bagel or whatever with poppy seeds on it, you could test positive for using opium?
I think that could happen, actually. You know, get the poppy seeds on the on a McDonald's hamburger bun or something. Yeah, that.
But I swear, I was just getting a quarter pounder.
I know that's the thing. It was a kind of an interesting week, an interesting couple of weeks here. We'll talk about what happened to Aereo. That was they lost their big Supreme Court.
I know.
Case.
Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I was, and mm-hmm, I was really disappointed. And they're trying to do a workaround for that, and there have been some drone flyers have
no
been arrested.
Kidding. Is this the New York story?
The New York story. But there are a number of arrests, so I thought I'd go through this thing because, actually, I fly my drone quite often.
You have flown in some pretty interesting spots.
I've flown my drone quite a bit, so I thought I'll review the people who are getting arrested, why they're getting arrested, and what's going on.
But you're responsible. You've never gotten in anybody's way when you're doing.
I'm not going to fly around helicopters or around airports.
You can be stupid
mm-hmm. and do it, but... But there was some guy just flying around UVA, just taking pictures down at UVA, and he was arrested with a $10,000 fine.
Wow.
And he wasn't doing much more than probably I would have been doing if mm-hmm. I'd have been down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about some of the startup efforts that are going on in Thailand. Kind of an interesting thing. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Well, you were away.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
We got an email from June in Burke. Dear Doc and Jim, how safe is it to let my browser save my passwords? I let the browser save my passwords on both my home computer and my work computer. Am I vulnerable? Love the show, June. Well, June, letting your web browser save your passwords for you seems like a helpful convenience, particularly when you've got different passwords for everything. You don't have to remember them. It is convenient, but it does come at some risks. See, whenever you visit a website and you need to log in and it remembers your password, it actually saves your username and password in an unencrypted file. That's what your browser uses. So it just uses that file and fills it in for you automatically. So it's really convenient unless somebody has access to your computer. Then they could simply get that file, look up all your username and passwords, you got no security. So I'd say your computer at home is probably okay. I wouldn't do it on the computer at work because you don't really own that computer.
No.
And the IT department has access to it, so they could get in there. They could see your passwords. Now, you might like to use a utility called LastPass, which actually saves all your passwords in encrypted form. And then when you log in, LastPass actually fills out the item for you. Now, the beauty of LastPass is that it's saved on your computer, but everything's saved in an encrypted format. So even if somebody gets to your computer, they really can't get to LastPass because they'd have to get the sort of the master logon key to really access it. So that might be a better way to do it. Now, here's the thing though that you've got to be very careful. If you're going to be using it in another location, you might have a problem. So I would only use this password saving it for your home computer, nothing else. We got an email from Mary Ann in Oakton. Dear Tech Talk, I recently traveled to Connecticut and checked my email account at the business office of the hotel.
Uh-oh.
The next day, my email account had been hijacked.
Wow.
They changed the signature block, sent my incoming mail to trash, and sent out thousands of spam messages asking for money from a Dr. Chen. What should I do? The people are sending me hate mail telling Dr. Chen to leave them alone.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
what a nightmare.
First of all, Marianne, change the password to your email account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, remove any of the inbox rules. What they do is they send all of your inbox mail to trash because you get all these spam. When you send out all this spam, a lot of them are bad email addresses. You get these rejections. They don't want you to know this is going on. So everything is just sent to trash. That's why they do that. So you want to, if they've changed any inbox rules, if they've changed any forwarding rules, you don't want your emails forwarded anywhere. You want to change those, make certain, get rid of any unwanted forwarding rules. Change the signature block. Now, your password obviously was compromised in the business office. Now, there could have been two ways that this was done. The first way, maybe the browser was set to remember username and password.
Yeah, sure.
So they just set the browser and they say, yeah, remember all username and passwords. And, of course, since that had already been set up, it didn't ask for your permission. It just saved your username and password. So that could have been one, and then they just come in there and they can easily access the computer and get the username and password. And they could actually have some kind of Trojan on there where they could read that file remotely and get the information. Now, another thing that they might have on the computer, they might have a keystroke logger that actually logs all your keystrokes and sends it to a remote location. This is why I never like to trust public computers. Now, Sometimes I do have to use them because I got to log on and maybe print out a print out a boarding pass or something. So what I do whenever I log on to a public computer, I always make certain that after I'm finished, I go to the setup, I go to the browser, and I actually erase all passwords that may have been stored. Mm-hmm. And I assume that it's set up to remember those passwords. So, like, so in Internet Explorer, you go to Tools, and then Internet Options, and then the General tab. And under that, you've got a button there that says Delete History, Delete Cookies, and Delete Passwords, and bingo, your problem is solved. Now, when this happens, you need to notify your system administrator, because now there now have been thousands of spam messages sent through your corporate email server account. So your corporate server account may be blacklisted.
Yikes.
And your system administrator is going to have to make some amends and say, look, we're going to solve this problem, you know, and blah, 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 and try to get you off the blacklist. So make certain you talk to them about that and have them scan your email account for any kind of additional irregularities that they may find.
This is truly a nightmare.
It could be a huge nightmare. Mm. We got an email from Chow in Indiana. Dear Tech Talk, how do I know whether my email server is on a spam blacklist? What do you know? This is just like so coincidental.
Yeah.
We just get coordinated emails here at
Tech
Talk.
It's amazing how that happens.
Where do I check? Love the show. Chow from Indiana. Well, Chow, there are hundreds of spam blacklists. They're private blacklists or corporate spam that firewalls for, and they're private. There are many other types. There are corporate spam firewall blacklists. There are private public blacklists. There are many types, and you need to check them all to see where you have it. Now, most of the spam blacklists track the reputation of the email servers that are being used to send outgoing mail. So, if your company uses its own servers and like somebody recently has just had thousands of email spam sent out from their account, well, maybe you're blacklisted. So what you've got to do is you've got to know the IP address of your email servers. That's what you're checking on. And then you've got to go to the blacklists. Now, there are a number of public enterprise spam firewall blacklists, private ISP blacklists. You can check the public blacklists. There are over 120 public blacklists that are out there, and there are a couple of sites that you can use to check whether you're on it. One is mxtoolbox.com/blacklists.aspx, and I'll post that to the Stratford website. And you click on that, and you just put in the IP address of your mail server, and it'll tell you whether you've been blacklisted. Another one is dnsstuff.com/tools. Scroll down to the bottom of that, and there's a blacklist database, and you put in your IP address, and it will check whether you're on any of the blacklists. So that's what you can do. These blacklists are pretty convenient because what they do, people maintain these blacklists, and then when you've got spam firewalls that they're run by Barracuda or Cisco Ironport or McAfee, these spam firewalls will go to the blacklists. They will check whether incoming email is from one of the blacklisted servers. And if it is, they just put that email directly into spam. You don't even see it. So these blacklists are really good. But if you get on one because, you know, somebody's using your server for sending out spam, then you've got a problem. It used to be that people would use the outgoing server, say a corporate server that was not password protected. They would use it as a relay, and they would send out emails with an outgoing server. Now most of the outgoing servers are password protected, so you just can't do that. And so they tend to blacklist all of the outgoing email servers that are not password protected because there's just a lot of spam that goes through them. That was a great question, and it's something that is very timely, certainly.
Absolutely.
This week. That's right.
So,
well, we love your emails. Mm-hmm. So email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get back to you either on the next show or we'll email you directly.
Absolutely. This is Tech Talk Radio, Saturday morning on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HT2, and online both at federalnewsradio.com and techtalkonline.com. We'll be right back, right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology.
And we have a guest.
Yes. Don't step till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Berg.
Don't step, make it pop. DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'm a fight.
Yeah, there you are.
Can I have a new intro?
No. You know, why don't you like that? I went through a lot of time on that.
You're right. Hey, come on. You're right. I'm sorry, man. Forget what I said.
Man, you know how to hurt a guy.
I ran down here as quickly as I could because I heard the dog was talking about the Galaxy elevator.
The space elevator. We did that last week, actually, in our best of show.
That keeps out in his back pocket.
That's right.
It's sort of like, you know, the curveball that you need.
Exactly.
It's his strikeout pitch.
Yeah. You never know. You never know when it's going to come
up. He reaches behind his ear, gets a little Brill Cream, put it on a ball.
Little pine tar.
Exactly.
Pine tar. Doc, I don't have a lot of time here since it's
your show. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Since this is your show. what's the big news you're dropping on everybody today, man? Because normally you have one nugget. I can take the big nugget. Just go to it. I know you like to wait till the end.
Okay.
But give it to us now.
People flying drones are getting arrested.
I was hoping you would.
People flying drones are getting arrested. I mean, some guy up in New York City got arrested. Some guy flying a drone down University of Virginia. Just flying his drone, like same kind of drone I have.
Well, let's stop
$10,000 fine.
Stop the show. Has anybody approached you while you've been playing with your drone?
Nobody.
No law enforcement people.
Nobody
said a word.
Except I don't fly it around helicopters.
No. Or near airports.
I do fly over the police station.
And you remember the day we did that? The police car drove right past.
He didn't know what to do.
Any attention.
Well, he kind of stopped. He looked over. He says, I don't have a rule book for this one. What am I going to do?
There's no check box on the ticket form for
that. I'm just going to keep going, and maybe this will go away.
So the other thing is, you've heard about the big Aereo. They lost their Supreme Court case.
This is a big deal, too. You know all about this, right?
You know, Aereo. They would pull TV off the airways, and then they would stream it over the internet. And so they lost the case saying there's a copyright violation. And I just disagree with this completely. But now what they're trying to do is they're saying, okay, well, if we're then going to be viewed as a cable company, as the Supreme Court said, then there's another rule, the copyright rule, that says that cable companies are allowed to stream on the air TV anyway. They said we want to be viewed as a from a copyright point of view as a cable company, but from a telecom point of view, we want to be viewed as something else.
So they're trying
to go back.
Doc, you've just spurred just a giant brainstorm here because a friend of mine told me because of cable prices being so expensive, he says, "Well, I just disconnected from that. I do Netflix and I do Hulu." And then I just get over the air
TV
by putting some kind of paper clip in the deal in the back. What is this? What do you do?
You can get over the air digital TV very easily.
Just get a box. right?
Mm-hmm.
For the
box.
You get there. There's a digital converter that you hook up to your antenna,
really?
And no, you can watch the.
I don't have an antenna anymore.
Except your TV will support digital over the air input.
Really?
It will.
And that's
yes.
free.
It's
yes.
free. It's
okay.
free.
You have to get the box, though. This is the box that they were giving away for free, right, Doc? You get the coupon.
Yeah, but you could do it with you just hang rabbit ears out the window.
Oh, that's right. So with the new TVs, you don't even need the box.
You
right?
don't need the box because they're already digital.
That's
I'm all
right.
over this, Doc. Because I'm telling you, the only reason I haven't gone, you know, total atomic, in other words, unplugging cable,
mm-hmm.
going Netflix and the other one is I want local news.
Yeah.
So if I can get local news,
you can
unplug that bad boy this afternoon.
You can.
So you don't watch any sports
and
on,
so what,
on
no,
TV?
No. So what you've got to do to get the digital signal is that you need a good signal to noise, and so you simply get an antenna with an amplifier.
Signal to noise.
So you get like a 90 dB amplifier.
Right.
And so you just get an amplified signal. That's all you need.
Sheesh.
Well, that's all
he'll
you
probably need.
Need
that because he is out in the hinterlands up there in.
I'm in the northern territories.
Northern, he's above the Arctic Circle in Urbana, right?
Pretty close, man.
But
close.
But you see, you could just put the antenna up in your attic,
really,
and then you just get an amplifier. You'll get enough signal. You can play around
what
with it.
What are you
it.
Doing next weekend after Chuck?
Yeah, really. Can you bring your tinfoil helmet
and
everything?
Bring the whole thing. And then, a lot of people are listening right now. Want to do this?
And then
local channels.
And then what you do? You see your TV. TV has an antenna input,
right?
And then it's got a sort of a cable input. So if you're going to use, say it would be like a DVD. It would be like a DVD input.
Right.
So if you're using Netflix with your DVD player, is that how you're getting
right.
internet access? How do you get internet? How do you get Netflix at your house
through your
DVD?
No. I'll keep. You heard the triple play. I'll keep the computer hookup.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how I'll get my Netflix and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. But I don't need.
So,
the cable.
But how
except,
much of a
except,
savings?
Except, how do you get the internet into your TV? Do you just plug your?
It's Wi-Fi.
Oh, your internet's Wi-Fi.
Right.
Oh, you've got a very fancy.
Doctor,
fancy.
I worked for you, with you forever.
You get
right?
your do you get your cable from the same place you get your internet?
Yes,
and all that?
Yes.
So, will you actually save any money by
yes.
bailing out on how
yes.
much?
$60-$70.
So all you'll do is you'll just change the input. Just change the input to antenna. And then you'll have an antenna with an amplifier. You'll get over the air
and
stuff.
Just disconnect the cable part.
And you'll just disconnect the cable part. Yeah.
I love
and you just
hey, what's
turn
the look,
up, turn
Jimmy?
Up the cable.
What's the
I'm
look
just saying it's so simple. It's not. Oh. I'm just saying. Hey, look, he's
okay, man.
But you won't be able
I'm
to
not
get.
Denigrating
you won't
you.
Be able to get
back
pure.
Off.
You won't be able to get pure cable plays like Discovery Channel. That'll be gone.
CNN
will be gone.
Masson's gone. Stuff like that.
You know, Fox News will be gone.
Boy, got silent here. I love everybody now. Come on. I love everybody. Yes, I do. Well, Doc, that was beautiful. Now,
so,
I'll go do that.
Allow me to ask. So once David gets rid of that, and we've mm-hmm. been talking about Google TV and Apple TV, mm-hmm. and you get a dongle for that, right?
Yeah.
So with that, I said the word dongle, and he lit up.
So the thing is you can get content mm-hmm. other than over the air
right.
stuff from Google TV or Apple TV. So they have contracts for different for content you can get through them. But if you just want the over the air stuff, the way to do it is with the antenna.
Thank you.
That's like your local
you
news. That's like
Netflix
your local
and Hulu.
Do you really get too. What do you get off of Hulu? I've had so many people
TV shows, the whole thing.
I've
all
heard
you
so
want.
Many frustrated with Hulu.
No, I'm not frustrated at all.
No kidding.
No, I'm having a great time. As a matter of fact, I spend so much time on Netflix and Hulu. I'm going, why am I bothering with cable?
Yeah.
Why? Because I want to see the news.
Yeah.
I don't care about the cable.
See, I'd miss baseball if I didn't have a cable.
Right. Well, you get radio.
The thing is, with Netflix,
Word pictures.
The thing
right.
I like about Netflix, if you want to watch a movie, you just watch it, and it starts right now. You don't have to have a schedule like you do with regular cable. You got to look up, and you turn on, you get the movie, it's right in the middle of the movie.
You got everything on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Everything.
Oh, I know.
There, so,
I know.
You know.
I use it for stuff. Do I look like I'm a caveman
over
here?
It's every movie that's more than 4 years old.
Exactly. Walk towards the light.
Walk to the light, David. Walk to the light.
All right, Doc. Listen, thank you for that information.
We're here to help.
Okay. I'll take it to heart.
You know, this is a help program.
Exactly.
We teach people to fish here.
And Good luck with that drone.
Okay, well, I'm checking this out a little bit. I'm going to have to be, you know, flying my drone in disguise, you know,
What's the range of your drone miles wise? Is it miles?
No, I can only go up to 1,000 feet with it, I can get 1,200 feet. My controller will control it out to 1,200 feet.
That's it.
I'm
not talking about height. I'm talking about distance.
It's 1,200 feet from the controller.
It's 1,200 feet from the controller, either out horizontally or straight up.
Oh, okay.
And so then you go like 50 feet out and 1,150 up.
How does Amazon plan on delivering packages
It's under probably GPS control, so they don't see. And the reason that mine's limited to 1,000 feet, it's that I've got a very low power transmitter that meets the FCC requirements. Now, if I go in there and just goose it up.
No, not you, Doc.
Because I would never violate an FCC standard here. Never.
Okay.
But the people that are flying their drones, say at 2,000-3,000 feet, have goosed up their transmitter.
I've never noticed it before. There's a lightning bolt on his forehead. What happened here? I didn't know that. His bangs always covered it.
That's right.
So I forgot the question.
That's all right,
buddy. I'm old.
I'm leaving now. Bye bye.
Doc, okay. David. You're David, that's Doc.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thanks for stopping by. Have a nice weekend. Doc, tell you what, let's take a break here and we will come back and we'll do profiles in IT. This is and then we'll talk about the space elevator. See you, David. This is a Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Robin Lee. That would be L-I is his last name, Robin Lee. He co-founded the leading Chinese search engine, Baidu. You ever heard of Baidu?
I've never
before?
Heard of Baidu.
You never? It's a very big engine. He's actually one of the richest guys in China,
no
by the
kidding.
Way. Lee was born November 17th, 1968 in Yangquan, a small town southwest of Beijing, China, where he spent his childhood. His parents were both factory workers. Lee was admitted to the Yangquan First High School, and he enjoyed computer classes and participated in numerous programming competitions citywide. In 1987, Lee participated in China's National Higher Education Entrance Examination and achieved the highest score among all examinees in Yangquan. So that meant he could go to the big school. He was accepted at Peking University and received a Bachelor of Science in Information Management. In the fall of 1991, Lee enrolled in the computer science PhD program at the University of Buffalo, which was part of the SUNY, the State University of New York. He received an MS degree in computer science in 1994, and he decided just to drop out of the PhD program and just stick with his master's degree. In 1994,
I'm sure Mama Lee was very disappointed.
Yeah, Mom was extremely disappointed, you know, back in Yangquan. In 1994, Lee joined the IDD Information Services, which is a division of Dow Jones, where he helped develop software programs for the online edition of the Wall Street Journal. In 1996, while at IDD, Lee developed RankDex, which was a site-scoring algorithm for search engine page ranking. He later used this technology for the Baidu search engine. Around the same time that he developed RankDex, there were two guys you may have heard of, Sergey Brin and Larry Page. They were experimenting with a similar algorithm called Backrub, and that later became Google. So you can kind of see these guys are going to be big competitors, and they are big competitors in China. In 1997, Lee became a staff engineer at InfoSeek, which was a search engine company. He published a number of technical papers that were very widely read, so he became well-known in the search business. And he developed a picture search algorithm, which was used by Go.com. Because of his notoriety in the search business, he was invited by the Chinese government to return to Beijing for the communist regime's 50th anniversary.
Wow.
So, sometimes people hold that against him, but it did get him back to China to look things over. He saw the potential of China and the internet and decided to start a company. So in 2000, Lee and a biochemist friend, Eric Xu, launched Baidu. The name refers to, get this, this is a Chinese, Baidu, it's a Chinese word, and the name refers to search for one's dream. Baidu, search for one's dream. It was a line from the Song Dynasty poem. They were backed, this new company that they started, Baidu, was backed by $1.2 million from Integrity Partners and Peninsula Capital. They got another $10 million a year later from Draper Fisher and IDG Technology Ventures. Lee and Xu sold Baidu's first service as a paid application to the China's web portals, and they basically provided a back-end search technique for the web portals, and they got all the biggest web portals to sign up, and they were providing all of this search capability to these portals, but nobody knew about Baidu because they were like just a background service that the portals used. They made no money. I mean, they'd sold all the biggest biggest web portals, but they weren't making any money. So in 2001, they did what they call a pivot. They pivoted. They dropped all the portals, and they decided to become their own independent search engine site. And they rebooted as Baidu into the independent search engine site. Later that year, when they were trying to, expand their market share with this new idea, Robin Lee was unhappy with his the progress of his tech team. So he set aside his CEO duties, and he took control of the site search development. And he did a crash project called Shandian, or Thunder and Lightning. Thunder and Lightning. And they doubled the number of weekly meetings. He slept in his office, and he just started, cranking up the intensity on the development team side. Within a year, Baidu was the leading search engine in China. When Baidu went public in 2005, it had $13.4 million in annual revenue and achieved the biggest first-day drop in the decade on NASDAQ. It started out at $27 a share, and by the end of the day, it was up 4X.
Wow.
That was a huge jump that first day. Baidu is the largest Chinese search engine with over 80% of the market share by search query and the second largest independent search engine in the world. And Google and Baidu are really duking it out in China.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just trying to really compete with each other. And Google has now has a Chinese character search, which is quite good. And they are beginning to compete favorably with Baidu. So it's a real knockdown, drag out competition there in China. Now, at the time of its IPO, a quarter of Baidu's traffic came from MP3 searches for pirated music. It was a little bit shady, actually, because the Google Google started blocking all of that kind of stuff. They also have profited by placing questionable ads on the site, like for quack doctors and things. So they've suffered a little bit of a reputation issue there in China, but they're trying to clean up their act as they expand. But Robin Lee, despite this fact, he is still taking on Google quite successfully. He's created a very valuable company. And now I think he's the – at one point he was the wealthiest person in China. Now I think he's the second wealthiest. So wow. He's made a boatload of money there. So there you go. All you want to know about Robin Lee, the co-founder of the leading Chinese search engine, Baidu.
I think you need to change the slogan of Stratford University to searching for one's dreams. Could you help people to search for one's dreams?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's such a beautiful thought.
It is a beautiful thought, yes.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Hope you're paying attention because your chance to win a fabulous prize comes up in the pop quiz in just a moment here on Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 1500 AM and 107.7 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the Classroom of the Airways, also known as a radio show.
Sometimes, course, but infrequently.
Yes. Also, whenever there's a Classroom of the Airways, of course, we're always teaching. And earlier in the show, I was teaching, we were talking about Robin Lee, the co-founder of the leading Chinese search engine, Baidu. And so I'm going to test whether you were listening to that, and we'll have a pop quiz or an assessment. When he came up with the name Baidu, that name was inspired by what?
Right.
What was the phrase that inspired that name? Now, if you get the correct answer to this pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. And all you have to do is reach us with a particular way.
Well, yeah, it would be. We call that picking up the phone.
Okay.
And what you do when you pick up the phone, then you have to dial the appropriate 10 digits in the correct order. Those digits would be, if you're calling from west of Peking, China, it's 877-936-9333. Mm-hmm. If you're calling from south of the campus at SUNY wherever he was, it's it was 87 SUNY Buffalo. Thank you. Tip in from Andrew. 877-936-9333. And if you're located anywhere other than any of those places, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. But wait.
If you're,
you have another idea.
That's right. If you're calling in from the shores of the Mekong River in Thailand, just simply use Skype. Connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your phone call will be forwarded directly to the station without being censored by the military leadership that just created a coup there in Thailand about a month ago.
It's never simple.
No, it's never simple.
Or just pick up the phone and 877-936-9333. We make a whole big production out of that. Why
That's
is that?
That's right. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about drone enthusiasts and getting arrested.
Yeah,
this has been a problem. Okay, last fall, a Brooklyn man was arrested after his drone struck two Manhattan skyscrapers.
Good grief.
And crashed 20 feet away from a pedestrian. I mean, this is an issue.
Yes.
Because when you are around tall buildings, the GPS doesn't work well.
Ah, really?
And it's erratic. See, this could have happened to me because I was flying my drone in downtown Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there in town center. And I noticed when I got up about a couple of hundred feet, I was getting irregular performance.
Well, what is it? Is it the shadowing of the skyscrapers?
The skyscrapers will block satellite signals, mm-hmm. and it'll also change the phase of the satellite signal. So you might move over, and all of a sudden, you know, your GPS location jumps. So you could be close to a building, and it will just crash into the building because, you know, the phase of the GPS changes. So I actually stayed far away from any buildings, but I can see where this would be a problem.
But yours in particular is supposed to return to you if the GPS is interrupted, right?
It will, as long as it doesn't know it's interrupted. It's just...
Oh, it's
shifted.
Just, is it shifted?
It's
oh,
just
I
shifted,
see.
So it doesn't return to me.
Ah.
So... That could have happened to me. So I would not fly my drone in Manhattan after what I know about GPS. Mm-hmm. Now, in April of 2014, an Ohio man was arrested while filming a scene of a car crash because the drone blocked the medical helicopter from landing.
Oh, man.
Now, and the thing is, the police told him, you know, to bring down the drone, and he didn't do it. In July 2014, two men were arrested in New York City on charges of flying a drone too close to a police helicopter.
Yeah.
See, that's why the helicopters fly around between 500 feet and 1,000 feet. That's the typical range.
Yep.
And then commercial aircraft are maybe above 1,500 feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they tell the drones to stay below 400 feet, so you're out of the helicopter range.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, don't be close to airports.
Well, that should be common sense. But
now, the FAA estimates that there are about 7,500 drones will be flying across the sky for commercial use by 2018. The agency plans to issue rules by the end of this year governing the flight of drones weighing less than 55 pounds. In the meantime, FAA advises drone hobbyists like me to follow some rules, like don't fly higher than 400 feet,
right,
and don't fly within 5 miles of an airport without special permission. Now,
mm-hmm.
actually, I do go above 400 feet, but I don't get close to airports. But I don't fly above 400 feet if there are any helicopters around.
Sure.
Now, last month, the FAA restated its guidelines and said there have been recent incidents of reckless use of unmanned model aircraft near airports and involving large crowds of people. Now, in March, a judge dismissed an FAA $10,000 fine against a videographer who was accused of recklessly flying a drone with a camera around UVA, University of Virginia. And the judge said that the FAA didn't have authority over civilian drones, but he was just, I mean, I could have been down there taking pictures at UVA, and I mean, I'm thinking, why would they have arrested him? I don't get that. In the past 2 years, pilots have reported 15 close calls with small drones near airports. This is a problem.
It wouldn't take.
People flying. Yeah, it wouldn't take.
If a bird can take down a jet, you know.
Flying near an airport is just stupid.
Yeah.
Because these small drones, they don't show up on the air traffic controllers, mm-hmm. radar screens, and they don't trigger collision avoidance systems. Now, earlier this year, a drone that was filming a triathlon in Australia fell from the sky and struck a runner on the head, sending her to the hospital.
Good grief.
That's another problem. Now, in last August, a drone crashed into the stands at Virginia Motor
That's right.
Motorsport Park, causing minor injuries to several spectators. So you can see here, if you're really unwise, fly around crowds, fly around skyscrapers where you're going to lose your GPS,
mm-hmm.
or around airports or in flight paths of helicopters, you're going to have a problem. But if you just are, you know, behaving normally and using responsible actions, I don't think anybody's going to bother you.
No.
So I'm going to still fly my drone, but I'm going to do it responsibly.
But you generally do it in uncrowded areas.
I do it fairly uncrowded areas.
Let me ask you this. If you're in a crowded area, is there other RF interference that could mess up the GPS, like you know, cell phone towers, people are using other things. Could that disrupt the GPS of your drone?
No, if you get too close to cell phone towers, sometimes you'll lose your RF controls, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really disrupt the GPS so much because
okay.
that's a different frequency. So the only time that my drone fell out of the sky, I had a cracked propeller, and the propeller broke. And the drone flipped down and it just came straight down.
Didn't you crack the propeller by crashing into a tree?
I did crack the propeller at an earlier time.
Well, you know what?
I should have done a better maintenance.
What you need to do is you need to pre-flight your craft before you go up.
That's exactly.
So I noticed here you're talking about drones weighing less than 55 pounds. Good grief! What? How big can these things be?
Well, a drone can be quite large. And uh-huh. so I'm thinking that, say, the Amazon drones are going to be delivering packages are going to weigh more than 55 pounds.
Probably. They'd have
to. If you need longer flight times, you'll have to have more batteries. So,
how much does yours weigh?
Mine probably just weighs a couple of pounds.
Yeah, it's pretty light.
It's not very heavy. And it stays up 30 minutes. It's good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep flying it. I'm going to try to not be arrested, but I'll report back if I have any skirmishes.
Well, if you don't show up some morning, I'll know what happened.
Okay. Very good.
Well, Doc, we do not have a winner yet. In fact, nobody's called. We have an empty classroom. Shame on you guys. Ask the question again, please.
Okay. Earlier in the show, I talked about Robin Lee. He was co-founder of the leading search engine company, Baidu. Where did the name Baidu come from?
Okay. It was a slogan.
Came from a poem written during the Song Dynasty almost 800 years ago.
All right. If you know that answer, please give us a call now. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skill data mining and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology.
And we do now have somebody to talk to on the phone. Let us go to, ironically, line number one. This is Jim calling from Vienna, Virginia. Good morning, Jim. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm great, and I'm here alert and awake and ready to answer.
We should just give you a prize for that.
So early in the show, we talked about Robin Lee, co-founder of the search engine company Baidu. What did the name Baidu come from?
Baidu means searching for one's dream.
Perfect. You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room.
Jim, thank you. And you know what they say, being successful is just 85% showing up. So just being awake helps.
Right.
Thanks for listening, Jim. Hang on a second. Andrew Mitchell will take your information. And, Doc, you have more stuff for us to talk about over there.
Yes, we've got lots of things. I was in Thailand, and I was interested in sort of the tech scene there in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And they have something called the Founder Institute. It was launched in Thailand in November of 2013. Now, this is based on Silicon Valley techniques. It's an accelerator. And they launched their sixth chapter in Bangkok, Thailand. Now, the chapter is backed by by a company called Effective Measure, an Australian digital planning solutions and online measurements provider. Effective Measure will provide free access to brand and audience digital measurements and analytics, which to help the Founders Institute, to help the members of the Founders Institute start their companies. Now, the partnership's not limited to Bangkok, but extends to Singapore and Malaysia, too. The Bangkok chapter is led by three key operators in the Thai startup ecosystem, Krating Boonpol, Benjamin Rank, and Charlie Sharonfan. Krating Boonpol is a former Googler and founder of Disrupt University. Sharonfan is the co-director of the Founder Institute and also the founder and managing director of Hubba, Thailand's first co-working community for startups. It's a, it's an incubator. They call it a co-working community for startups, which is which we call in the U.S. an incubator, Hubba. And then Benjamin Rank, who's CTO of Thailand and the Thailand country manager of Jet Abroad, which is a global online travel agency. The Founder Institute will play a vital role in the earliest stages of a company's development in order to prepare the founders to build enduring companies using Silicon Valley best practices. Actually, I love to see this kind of activity going on because the way you really help these economies and these developing countries is helping them start new companies using some of the accelerator techniques that work so well in Silicon Valley. And that actually led me to the website of the week, Disrupt University.
Isn't that our code name here?
That's right, Disrupt University.
Oh, we're Dysfunction University.
Yeah, Dysfunctioning University. Yeah, but this is Disrupt University. It's a hub for progressive Thai innovators that will help prepare them to stay ahead of the curve and be successful and be a successful part of the IT revolution in Thailand. Now, Disrupt University equips students with cutting-edge tactics adapted directly from Silicon Valley, the world's capital of technology and innovation. The program combines framework of the top accelerators in Silicon Valley based on classes that are actually taught at Stanford University and using the practical tools that are set up in startup communities and tech companies in Silicon Valley. Classes at Disrupt University cover a wide range of topics that focus on important areas like lean startups, business model innovation, design thinking, perfect pitch, how to get your pitch, venture capital and fundraising, and idea networking. These are all core ideas in the Silicon Valley ecosystem. Now, the theme of the instruction is dream, design, and disrupt, the three Ds. The university offers a five-day crash course in entrepreneurship. Classes are held over four successive weekends because most of the entrepreneurs actually have other jobs.
Yeah.
Krating Boonpol is the dean, the founder, and the instructor. He was previously the global lead marketing manager for Google Earth, Moon, and Mars at Google headquarters in Silicon Valley. Have you ever looked at Google Mars, by the way?
I have not, no.
Have you ever looked at Google Moon?
No.
Yeah. You go to Google Moon, Google Mars, and you can actually, just like Google, you know, Google Earth, you can look around.
No kidding.
You can check them out, yeah. So you can figure out what's on the other side of the moon.
Wow. Do they have a little car up there that's, I guess they just, this is based on photography from
It's based on photography, but I don't think there's not a navigation system on the moon.
No.
I don't think so. But you could check that. Now he left Google. He started his own company, raised $1.1 million from angel investors, and so it is disruptuniversity.com, and you can go to that site. That's the website of the week. I just love seeing this, you know, technology development in Thailand while I was there.
I can't use Google Moon to find the best pizza on the moon.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's probably only going to be rarely that whenever we land on the moon there would be pizza.
Whenever they bring it.
Whenever
and
they
it's
bring
in a tube.
It. And it's not very it's probably like in a toothpaste tube and it's not I don't think that would be that good.
I think we should make an executive decision here because you got a lot to talk about. You got the Aereo thing. Let's just stay here and we'll run out the clock,
okay,
as they say.
Now let's talk about Aereo because this was actually something that was a big disappointment to me. Aereo came up with this clever way to get over-the-air broadcasts to sent to your sent over the internet, streamed to you over the internet, so you wouldn't have to use your cable provider to get over the air connections. Now, it turned out that the rules were that, say, if a cable company, you know, wants to rebroadcast over the air content from from a local TV station, they have to pay some small licensing fee to that station, and then they can rebroadcast it. It turns out, though, that if you have your own antenna and you ping an antenna out the window, you're able to get the broadcast free
sure.
of charge.
Right.
So what Aereo did that was very clever, they basically set up an array of antennas. And when you would sign in for Aereo, you would own one of those antennas.
Mm-hmm.
So it was your personal antenna was picking up the signal, and then that antenna would stream it to your home TV set. So the antenna was actually just remotely located. And so I thought it was a very clever workaround, because it seemed to me that it was totally within the law. The fact that your antenna is not at your own house, but it's remotely away from you, I thought was a perfectly valid situation. But it went to the Supreme Court, and they said, no, this is nothing different than a cable company. And they totally trashed the Aereo business model, which was a big, big disappointment. And I think it was a setback,
yeah,
actually, for, you know, for over-the-air television. And so, you know, Aereo had not come to Washington, D.C. yet, but I'd signed up. I said, when you get here, I want to be there. So I got a letter as one of the potential customers.
Oh, you did?
Of Aereo. This is what I got, a personal letter from Chet Kanogia. He's the founder. He says, a little over a year ago, our team embarked on a journey to improve consumer television experience using technology to create smart, cloud-based television antennas that consumers could use to access live over-the-air broadcast television. On Wednesday, June 25th, the United States Supreme Court reversed the lower court decision in favor of Aereo's, dealing a massive setback to the consumer. As a result of that decision, our case has been returned to the lower court. We've decided to pause our operations temporarily as we consult with the court and map out our next steps. All the users will be refunded their last paid month. If you have any questions about your account, please email support@aereo.com. The spectrum that broadcasters use to transmit over-the-air programming belongs to the American public, and we believe that you have a right to access that live programming, whether your antenna sits on the roof of your home, on top of your television, or in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
On behalf of the entire team at Aereo, we thank you for the outpouring of support. It's been staggering. We're so grateful for your emails, tweets, and Facebook posts. Keep the voices loud and sign up for updates at protectmyantenna.org. Protectmyantenna.org. Our journey is far from done.
Wow.
Yours truly, Chet Kanogia. And they have the VCs that have backed it have put in $100 million so far.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a problem, but they're trying to work around this and say, okay, well, if the Supreme Court says that we're like a cable company, then cable companies have a right to over-the-air content, and they just, you know, pay a small licensing fee. So now they're trying to rework it in view of the court decision. I think the court made the wrong decision here. I just disagree with this completely, and I'm really disappointed, because if we would have been able to get over-the-air local broadcasting, we could just cut the cable completely. And, of course, this is what the cable companies were worried about.
Right, absolutely.
I'll tell you, the show just ended so quickly.
It did.
And I'll tell you, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Also, make certain to check out the Stratford University programs by going to the website, stratford.edu. And when you go there, tell them that you heard about the programs on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening. If you missed part of the show, we'd like to hear it all over again. We will replay at 3 o'clock this afternoon here on Federal News Radio. We'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500. 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Speaking of the Nationals, they are on TV tonight, national TV, so it's a late game. It is going to start at 7 o'clock, first pitch, pregame here on Federal News Radio at 6:30. The Nats and the Phillies from PNC Park. It's going to be sunny, nice today, upper 80s right now outside our studios in Northwest. We have mostly sunny skies, 78.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.